Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Book Riot Podcast. I'm Jeff O'Neill.
I'm Rebecca Shinsky.
And today we are doing two things. We are doing a quick check-in with the 2024 Pulitzer Prizes, which were announced yesterday. And then we're going to wrap up our annual Moms, Dads, and Grads recommendation extravaganza so that you guys can get any relevant shopping done before the prime shopping season begins. Let's see. Before we get too far into it, I do want to mention that if you are looking for a great Mother's Day gift or Father's Day gift or graduation gift or just gift.
Or a treat yourself.
Treat yourself. MyTBR.co, which is Book Riot's tailored custom book recommendation service. Our bibliologists, that's what we call them, will respond to your requests or your giftees' requests for reading recommendations. And either, there are a couple different ways you can do this, they'll either send you an email with three recommendations per quarter, or you're feeling fancy, you can get actual real physical books delivered to your door or your giftee's door. Plans start at just $18. Go to mytbr.co/gift. There's a link in the show notes, mytbr.co/gift to get moving. It's a great, it's Mother's Day today in 15
Oops.
Minutes. Oops, print it out, put it in a card, wham, bam, there you go, Mom. For the rest of the ideas, you can check out the site over there. Several options for you. Okay. All right, let's go Pulitzer Prizes real quick. It's going to be a short. There's a reason we're not doing a full episode about this, Rebecca Shinsky.
We have read none of these, and we would not have guessed the fiction winner, I think, if you'd given us 50 guesses between us.
So the fiction winner is Night Watch by Jane Ann Phillips. It did get included in some stuff. It wasn't completely off my radar. I think it was long listed for the National Book Award. So it was on the radar.
Yeah, it might have been on that New York Times 100 Notables of last year. I didn't go back and check. I remember seeing it sort of bubbling around, but that it never popped up to like enough discourse where I was like, oh, this is going to be a big contender. But the Pulitzer does this sometimes. Sometimes they really come out of left field with all their good reasons for it. You know, there are tons of good books in the world that don't get a lot of discourse. I'm sure it's wonderful, but I was surprised.
And the finalists were Same Bed, Different Dreams by Ed Park, which I had talked about as an It book selection back in the fall, and that maybe I'd get to read it, except that it's 550 pages long, and I just didn't get to it. And then Wednesday's Child by Yi-Yun Lee, which is another book. All of these books are kind of in the same, two levels down from, I'm not saying quality, I'm just saying in terms of buzz. In the Groff, Whitehead, Zadie, Jesmyn, like none of those are here, Rebecca. And we've
none
talked before and again and again and again about what we were to do had we hit a platform and a megaphone like the National Book or the Pulitzer Prizes. And I've been wanting to read this book, honestly, and I probably will, especially because of now. And I'm sure it's great, but boy, does it just further flattens the attention to books. And I guess that's the Pulitzers to decide what they want to do with it. I don't know. I'm not sure what else to say. It's also another historical fiction set in the Civil War. I can't get that excited about that myself, just in terms of topic. I was much more interested in the Same Bed, Different Dreams, which is polyspectric, kind of weirder kind of a thing. Maybe Night Watch gets super weird. I don't know. It is set in West Virginia's Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, and that, I'm sure, is fine. It's just cool and everything's everyone's yeah, treated well.
There's a baseline level of weirdness to the phrase West Virginia's Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, but a different kind of weirdness than what you're talking about with the Ed Park.
So, I don't know. If you've read this podcast at bookriot.com, let us know. When I posted, I wrote a quick summary with a little very, very light salt of commentary for Today in Books and for the site yesterday. I got more people saying I love the history picks than they've read this book. I don't think it's sold a whole bunch. I guess his transition. The History Winner, No Right to an Honest Living, The Struggles of Boston's Black Workers in the Civil War Era. Civil War, still holding it down. Mm-hmm. American Anarchy was a finalist by Michael Wilrick. The Epic Struggle Between Immigrant Rattles of the U.S. Government During the Dawn of the 20th Century. And the other finalist, Continental Reckoning, The American West and the Age of Expansion by Elliot West from University of Nebraska Press. So,
good day for them.
A finalist and a winner for Basic and a finalist for History for University of Nebraska Press. And Biography, The Winner is King of Life by Jonathan Eich. Not a surprise at all to me here.
Makes a lot of sense.
I guess the real surprise is there's two winners in Biography. And I didn't go back. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I have more memory of a Pulitzer not awarding something than doing two winners. So they really couldn't decide. I don't know how this works for the ultimate winner, because the way the Pulitzer works, there's a smaller jury of specialists that read a whole bunch of stuff. And they make a recommendation or a couple recommendations, I can't remember, but they recommend something to the larger Pulitzer board. I don't know what that larger Pulitzer board is doing. I would be very surprised if every single one of those Pulitzer board members was reading both the 700-page mm-hmm. King and the 400-page Master Slave Husband Wife and the Larry McMurtry A Life Finalist by St. Martin's Press, which Larry McMurtry wrote long books, so you know that was pretty long. But if we're just going like, okay, what do you vote for? And there's a tie, like, yeah, we got two winners. I don't know. I don't think we even know the Robert's Rules of Order of how that works. But congratulations there. All of them deserved. The memoir autobiography, I think, was the one that was the most legible to me. Mm-hmm. The winner is Liliana's Invincible Summer, A Sister's Search for Justice by Christina Rivera Garza from Hogarth, which I came close to listening to about 15 times last fall and never quite got there. Maybe this will put me over the edge. Finalist, The Country of the Blind by Andrew Leland. I guess mm-hmm. for a Book Riot pod faves, that's the one that
bubbles
up here.
That for him.
And The Best Minds, A Story of Friendship, Madness, and the Tragedy of Good Intention by Jonathan Rosen. Did you read that? I felt like you maybe did.
I did. Okay. Yeah, it's the Shinsky Zone. I listened to it. Yeah. It's very good. I maybe wouldn't have just like grabbed it out of thin air thinking about Pulitzer finalists. But it was just pretty early in my 2023 reading. I'm not surprised to see it here. I think that's well deserved.
Those three were for me, I guess, the likeliest, I guess, going in. Again, hundreds of books mm-hmm. you could have asked me to put on this list. General nonfiction will be done here. A Day in the Life of Edbed Salama, Anatomy of a Jerusalem Tragedy by Nathan Thrall from Metropolitan, which has had a groundswell of interest, as you might imagine, over the last 6 to 8 months. And then finalist Cobalt Red, How the Blood of the Congo Powers Our Lives by Siddhartha Kara, which is, I believe, about rare earth mining in the Congo. Mm-hmm. And then Fire Weather, A True Story from the Hotter World by Jonathan Valiant, which I think was kind of would have been my guess to win this. It's got a lot of
climate
mentions
change,
in Best of the
topical.
World, Knopf. Yeah. Again, another one that I came close to listening to about 9 times, but never pulled the trigger. So there's the list. Pretty interesting. I think notably, all but one of these books are by or about people of color. And mm-hmm. And the one book being Night Watch, and I don't even know that it's not. It could be that there's, central people of color in that. I just don't know for sure. But that's fascinating to see, and what a difference to see from a while ago. Yeah. Lots of worthy titles.
That's been a trend with the Pulitzers over mm-hmm. the last several years. I think real attention happening among their governing bodies to voices that have not historically, had a lot of time on the world stage or the U.S. stage, and to telling stories, presenting narratives that are really important to our understanding of the world that we live in and how we arrived here. A lot of the fiction that they lean towards is historical, I've noticed. And then, of course, there's the history and the biography categories on their own, sort of also are often around reframing or expanding our ways of looking at and understanding American history. Global history as well, but Pulitzers do tend to, I think, lean American for all kinds of reasons. It's an American prize.
Yep.
So it is really interesting to see that, a huge change since, you know, we were young readers and even just in the years that we've been doing this.
Mm-hmm. So those are the Pulitzers. If you've got feedback, if you've got recommendations for us or there are other listeners of the Book Riot podcast, podcast@bookriot.com. All right, we're going to do a first sponsor break and get into the recommendations.
Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Charming, easygoing, and rich, Xavier Castillo has the world at his fingertips. He also has no interest in taking over his family's empire, but that hasn't stopped women from throwing themselves at him. Unless, of course, the woman in question is his publicist. The cool, the intelligent, the ambitious Sloane Kensington, who is a high-powered publicist who's used to dealing with difficult clients, but none infuriate or tempt her more than a certain billionaire heir with his stupid dimples and laid-back attitude. She may be forced to work with him, but she'll never fall for him because he's a client and that's all he'll ever be. Right? Right, girl, like we all know. So just in case you didn't know, author Anna Wong is the best-selling author and book talk viral author of the Twisted Love series, the King of Sin series. Miss Wong, got it going on, okay? Make sure to check out King of Sloth by Anna Wong. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds. College student Blake and her girlfriend have one goal: join the exclusive sorority that promises connections to a network of trailblazing women of color. Now, Ella's acceptance is a sure thing. She's a daughter of a Serena Society alum, after all. Blake, on the other hand, lacks Ella's pedigree and her confidence. Luckily, though really unluckily, she finds courage at the bottom of a liquor bottle. When she drinks, she's bold and funny, and as pledging intensifies, so does Blake's drinking. Ella assures her that she's fine, partying hard is what it takes, but with her future on the line, Blake must decide how far she's willing to go to achieve glittering dreams of success. Now, just so you know, Jazz Hammonds is the 2023 winner of the Critics Scott King John Steptoe Award for New Talent for We Deserve Monuments, and We Deserve Monuments was an Amazon Best Books of the Year and Barnes & Noble Best Books of the Year for 2023, so suffice to say, y'all should check this new one out. Thanks again to Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Gallery Books. So Anna Green thought she was marrying Liam West for access to subsidized family housing while at UCLA, which is an interesting reason to marry someone, but you know, in this economy. So anyway, she signed divorce papers when the graduation caps were tossed and she thought she was done. She wasn't. 3 years later, Anna is a starving artist living paycheck to paycheck while West is a Stanford professor. Now, he is part of a conglomerate. His family owns this mega grocery store chain. He's not interested in working for them, but he is interested in those greenbacks, honey, that come in the form of a $100 million inheritance. To get it, he has to be married for 5 years. That's where our girl Anna comes back into play. So the two will fake a marriage, but as he gets to know her and gets to appreciate the feisty, foul-mouthed, paint-splattered girl that she is, he'll begin to wonder if the money is worth the love of his life. Pick up The Paradise Problem by Christina Lauren to find out if it is. And thanks again to Gallery Books for sponsoring this episode.
I don't remember where we stopped, Rebecca.
You got to scroll down to like page.
No, I did. But who's? I know I saw the pickup here. But whose read it was?
Okay. Why don't you read this one?
Why don't I read? Either. Okay. My dad was diagnosed last week with stage 4 cancer. I'm very sorry to hear this, I should say, and will be undergoing chemotherapy soon. He loves to read, always has a book in his hand, and is someone who's instilled in me from a young age a joy and love of reading. His favorite genres are out of my realm of expertise, and I was hoping that you could provide some recommendations for me to help take his mind off his treatment, his illness. He told me his favorite book that he's read in the last 5 years is Empire of the Vampire by Jay Kristoff. I just bought him the sequel. I also gave him The Puzzle Master last year, which he seemed to enjoy. Other authors I know that he has liked are Dean Koontz, Stephen King, Clive Cussler, and Dan Brown. I would also appreciate if you both had any recommendations for me as I navigate this new normal. I just bought Emperor of All Maladies and Grief is for People. Took two of our picks off the board right there, by the way. So good job you for listening and doing your own homework. I appreciate both you and this podcast more than you know. Never miss an episode. That's very nice, Kristen, and good Lord.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Kristen.
I don't know that I don't know there's anything we can do to help at all, make one iota of this better, but we will give it a shot. And Rebecca, you got something that's going to make it all better. And, you're going to come in.
Here we go. Yeah. Okay, well, for your dad, I looked up Empire of the Vampire. It looks like it's on the like sort of racy, spicy, sort of traditional vampire.
Yeah, your
story.
Dad shouts to dad here.
Yeah, dad can hang, is what I determined from this. So I took a little zag out of Vampire Land first to The Last Werewolf by Glenn Duncan. These are racy, spicy werewolf stories. There's a lot of sex, so just know that. But if dad is reading these spicy vampire books, he can probably hang with it. There are a couple sequels, but this one is narrated by a man who believes himself to be the last werewolf, and is trying to has been alive, you know, in werewolf form for like centuries, and is, you know, trying to survive. It's been a while. These were really big in like early Book Riot days, about 10 years ago. But I remember, like, it's a good time. I think your dad might enjoy those. For something that combines the vampire vibe with the Dan Brown vibe, The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova. This is also, you know, an older pick, so maybe try to put your feelers out and see if dad has already read it. But there is, like, a vampire somewhere in the world, or the discovery of vampires, and a person is trying to like put all the pieces together and solve a puzzle to figure out like how to locate them and what to do about it. And for the just like sort of thrillery mode that I see your dad doing with some Dean Koontz other stuff, just to also zag to a place that he might not have picked up on his own, I think maybe try S.A. Cosby, any or all of those. It seems like if dad is responsible for instilling this joy of reading in you, he probably has some eclecticism in his reading bag. So you can pick those out. For you, I have not read a lot of books about parents with cancer, but Bob was diagnosed with leukemia like almost 12 years ago. I'm not sure I've talked about it on the show before, but I've written about it. He is fine now, takes medication that maintains it. But once we came out of the initial couple of like the first couple of years of that, where it was really scary, I did a lot of reading about people whose partners had potentially fatal illnesses and, you know, sort of getting my head around what that experience might be like for me someday. Haven't gone there yet, but I've read a lot about it. And I think a lot of them are relatable or translatable into dealing with anyone that you love who's going through something like this and your own role in it. The Iceberg by Marion Coots is a particularly good one. Her husband is diagnosed with a neurological condition where he is, he's a writer and he is losing his ability to make language and to speak at the same time that their young child is learning to speak. And it's just like a whole lot of life is happening in that book. On Living by Carrie Egan is one of my favorites. I'm sure I've talked about it on these shows before. She is a chaplain in hospice, meeting with people at the ends of their lives. And the book is about like the lessons that we can take while we are living in our relationships so that you don't get to the end of your life or to the end of the life of someone you love having not said the thing or not done the thing or, you know, having a lot of regret. What Looks Like Bravery by Laurel Brateman came out last year. Her father died when she was, he was sick when she was like a child and into college. I believe he died when she was in college, and she wrestles with that for quite a while. But it's really beautiful, and what she does with her grief is what a lot of the story is about. And then just for Take Good Care of Yourself, Real Self-Care by Pooja Lakshman came out last year. She's a therapist. The book is great. She also has a Substack if you find yourself in a place of like, I cannot read a whole book about this right now. But it's like, you know, bubble baths will only get you so far. But here are some real ways to think about how to care for yourself, both every day and specifically in a time that is really physically and emotionally taxing, like all the things that you're dealing with when you have a parent who is going through a serious illness and you're handling your own feelings. You're probably helping in some way with their medical care. And there's just a lot of what ifs to get your head around. So that, hopefully that's a variety pack. Those have been all informative and helpful for me along the way.
Yeah, you know, I was when you were talking about the vampire thing, and again, this is outside of our realm, the spicy fantasy. I don't know if that qualifies as romanticy. And I'm not sure that I trust myself with even what's to come out of my mouth, but are we sure your dad wouldn't like the fourth wing? Are we sure?
Oh, interesting. I'm not sure.
Because, I mean, look, people love that book. And this is outside of whatever my opinion might be of the whole thing. I don't have an opinion about the book, honestly, other than I'm glad it's selling books and people are having a great time. But just looking at the packaging and a little of the blurb for the vampire thing, the Christoph book, you know, sometimes good things are good. And sometimes the people things that go for the big thing. Don't recommend Shasta if Coke is there. Like maybe fourth wing is Coke here. People
maybe,
like Coke.
Yeah.
Maybe not with every meal, but you know, go ahead and think about that. So I don't know if you've thought about that at all. So anyway, I put that there. In terms of the other picks, The Cartographers by Peng Shepard. I was talking about Shepard, who has a new book coming out pretty soon on the summer draft. I think. Is that where I was doing it?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Got an email from someone because I said that was Peng Shepard's debut novel. It was not. Apparently her debut novel is The Book of M. Bringing my ability to identify debut authors' novels to O for infinity, apparently. I do this all the time.
Well, we'll put her on the list with Taylor Jenkins Reid.
So The Cartographers, there's a mystery and maps and puzzles and mysteries, and it's really propulsive and a good, quick read. So I think that's one that would maybe scratch that particular itch. Daniel Trissoni, who wrote The Puzzle Master, has another book coming out called The Puzzle Box in October. Just put it on, just slap the label on the book. Just put puzzle in the title with Trissoni and move some units. Mm-hmm, and I had a lot of fun reading this, and I will probably read this again when it comes out. Again, that's October, so maybe you can stash that way for Christmas or sometime else when it's coming on. On the for you side, Rebecca has much more experience and knowledge and I guess sensitivity to this particular subject, so I'm not going to do too much except to maybe wonder. I'll pass through Rebecca first. Is H for Hawk interesting here?
That's kind of
my thought. Is this is a book about a woman who's raising a hawk, but very much in the shadow of her own father's presence, and she herself is trying to find something to do in the wake of loss. It is quite beautiful. And so it is about that, but also not so about that. Because I was like, I put Year of Magical Thinking here. I was like, that may be premature. Do we want to do this right now? I don't think so. I'm anti-recommending the Year of Magical Thinking by Joan Didion right now. But maybe H is for Hawk would be an idea for me.
I think H is for Hawk is a really interesting one there. And this is tough because there aren't a lot of books about like just going through the experience of a partner being sick or a parent being sick. Most of the books that get written, or at least the ones that rise up to where they've like come across my transom, are from the, this person did not survive the illness. It's a grief processing kind of story in some way. But like, I don't know, everybody is different. The way that, that I'm wired and the reason that I've read all of those is like, what is this like? What might it be like for me? Not that it makes any of those hard things any less hard, but having some sense of like how to think about what you might feel and like have someone else introduce you to it. It kind of feels like having guides, like somebody is holding a lantern taking you along this path that hopefully you won't walk, but that you may, that we'll all walk in some way in our lives at some point. Year of Magical Thinking is, that's a tough, man, that's a tough one.
I mean, beautiful really, and remarkable, but also
really hard.
Could hit the mole a little too hard with the hammer.
Yeah. You know, as you were talking, Jeff, and talking about H is for Hawk and even thinking about Year of Magical Thinking, it reminded me of, I can't remember the author's name, but the book is called My Glory Was I Had Such Friends.
Oh, yeah.
And she had, I want to say like an organ transplant when she was younger, and it's time to have it done again, like decades later. And she has to relocate across the country for it for months. And her friends basically like do a spreadsheet sign up of who's going to go visit her when and who will be in the hospital with her for different things. And she writes about the time that they spent together. And that's the closest that I've read to like the kind of experience that you may have if you're sitting with your dad while he's having chemo or if he's hospitalized for a while and you're spending time with him there. And there just might be something for you in that one too.
Yeah, that's by Amy Silverstein. Thank 2018. You. And then like I also thought about maybe Left on 10th by Delia Ephron because about her being sick and partner being sick. So maybe I just am not sure what level of reading about the thing you are going through or the thing that could maybe when we hope and fingers crossed does not happen.
It's hard to guess for someone else.
For you. I hope something there is interesting for you or your father and all the best from us. All right, Rebecca, your read.
Okay, this is a request for me.
Yeah.
For Catherine, for herself. She's moving to London in a few months and has only read really American authors or books that are popular in America. So she's looking for recommendations for books or authors based outside the U.S. They don't have to be U.K. specific. She's open to authors in translation, also open to books about moving or making major life changes.
Yeah, I dipped into the recency bias barrel. I thought The Beasting by Paul Murray, which is not set in London, but set in the UK, is a pretty good, again, as an outsider, who knows? But the people that judge these things over in the UK also seem to think it was a pretty good representation of a certain slice of life over in the Commonwealth. It's very readable. A lot happens. There's an upstairs, not really an upstairs, downstairs, but like multi-perspective view of what's going on in the world. And then I just have the sound of like an English soccer chant. Zany, zany.
I'm so mad you thought of this.
Echoing through. You had the first crack again. So, The Fraud is historical fiction, but any of the novels really you could pick up and have a great London kind of vibe experience with it as well. So those are my two. Zadie Smith, in case you needed a translation into what that semi-harmonious chant was doing there.
I can't think of any other novelist with the first name Zadie. If you're like writing fiction and your name is Zadie, are you like, what's my middle name? Should I go by that?
Yeah, I think it was Sharifa.
Zadie
and
is
I,
the
when
Sharifa
was
She's
on,
the
I have
one.
This working theory that like having a memorable name helps authors brand.
Yeah, I think that's
does.
Right.
It just like Paul Murray. It's a little rough to remember. Like it takes me a minute. It's like, which one was that? And then I was just trying to think.
All
of
the Pauls.
Paul Lynch just won the Pulitzer, the Booker Prize. Like, which Paul is it? Actually, that's not a bad recommendation either. The Paul Lynch book. Anyway, go. You go, Rebecca.
Okay. My notes first just say Ishiguro, baby.
Yep.
From the UK, Nobel Prize winner. Read any of them. I think Never Let Me Go is particularly excellent. That's a spec fic vibe. If you want to knock this out while book clubbing with us on the Patreon, we're going to do his book Remains of the Day, which turns 35 this year. We'll be doing that later this month. It's only like 230 pages. You've got plenty of time. And I love Maggie O'Farrell. She is an Irish author. She's taken a like more historical bent late at this later point in her career, but her earlier stuff was more my vibe. So take a look at those and just pick what works for you. But Instructions for a Heat Wave is my favorite. It's a get the gang back together. Like all this family is together during a heat wave in Ireland over the course of a summer, and family secrets come out and drama happens and everyone is like hot and cranky and it's wonderful.
Excellent.
Those are mine.
All right.
Okay. Your read.
I'm up. Let's see. So this one, the next one, we went to the recommendation well. We got some help here, or we did some research. Seeking a Novel by a Deaf American Author Featuring Deaf Characters, preferably recently published. Rebecca had one and then had a resource. So why don't you just go through this?
None came immediately to mind for me. It was that I have this feeling that I've read a book that qualifies, but I couldn't remember what it was. But Girl at War by Sarah Novick came up on a bunch of the lists that I found my way to when I was doing my research. And then I found a list of 10 must-read books by deaf, deafblind, and hard-of-hearing authors from the inclusiveasl.com website that looks like it has a bunch of really wonderful resources around accessibility and books with representation. So we will put the link to those in the show notes for you, Beth, and for anybody else who is interested in that. This was one that I had, you know, like a lacuna in my reading life for. So I'm going to be checking out some of those as well.
True Biz made the rounds. Was that last year or the year before? A lot of people, and I've been meaning read this, and I think this is going to be the, I want to read that. I'm meaning to. This is a good reminder that I should take a crack at that one.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. This next one is from Lisa, wants to purchase a book for her adult son, looking for a print book that is worthy of limited space on his bookshelf. He usually gets Kindle books, but does enjoy showcasing his favorites. This is for his 27th birthday. Wide-ranging reader of lit fic, if it's not too non-narrative or opaque, and nonfiction, also high-quality sci-fi and the best of graphic novels. His special interest is travel and international relations, and he has set himself a challenge to read a book from every country of the world. That's awesome. Like both of us, he adored A Gentleman in Moscow. He's a Murakami fan. Mm. He will dip into genre. He's read Dune twice. That's more than a dip into genre.
Dune. He's read Dune.
Yeah. And most of Stephen King. Okay. And the Slough House books.
All right.
So lots of options there for Lisa and her son. You have a good list here.
Yeah. So Elif Shafak is a global icon of literary fiction, upmarket literary fiction. I was kind of looking through, and maybe the best way to do Lisa is look through the synopses of her books and see which one sounds the most like it. I picked The Architect's Apprentice. That's the one I would recommend, but there's a bunch that are super interesting. Again, set in Europe or around the Mediterranean, and really, really cool there. I also picked out, again, Recency Bias, The Strange Eventful History by Claire Massoud, which is about a family of pied-noirs, basically French colonists living in Algeria, and then their sort of personal diaspora after the events of World War II and liberation, dealing with questions of colony and narrative and love and the stories we tell each other, and also all presented in Massoud's enveloping, elliptical, compelling writing and perspective. And then, is there a more cosmopolitan writer going than Victory City, or than Salman Rushdie? There is not. Victory City is set in India, and in reading Knife, which we are going to talk about, Rushdie was so, you know, again, I don't want to spoil too much of that. He was so pleased by the reception of Victory City that was coming out as he was during around the events of his attack, but he got good notes for it, good reviews for it, which still matter to him. And I guess, you know, authors are people too, Rebecca, lest we forget that, you know, people saying nice things about your work, no one doesn't want to sign up for that.
That's true.
And it's very readable. It is a story within stories about storytelling. Kind of not a terrible synopsis of the things that Rushdie himself seems most interested in. Because as much as he's a political writer, as much as he's a writer of ideas, he likes stories and language and references and myth and legend. Mm-hmm. And it's a terrific read. So those are my three picks.
I went more for the travel route first. Alibis by Andre Achimon. It's a few years old now. It's an essay collection about what travel means, why we travel, what we're looking for when we travel. It's not, you know, I wouldn't call it opaque by any stretch, but he writes through like particular travel experiences he's had and then explodes them out to situate them inside like the broader context and meaning of kind of capital T travel. It's the best thing that I've read about what it feels like to love travel. So I would take a look at that. A new book that's coming out later this month, that comes out May 28th. So this is dependent on when your kid's birthday is, but maybe you could give them an IOU, is A Walk in the Park by Kevin Fidarko. This is wonderful. Jeff, if this isn't on your radar, this is, I think, also right in the O'Neill pocket of people doing traveling experiences and feats of strength that you want to hear about, but never do yourself.
Now we're talking.
The author had quit his job, and then his best friend, who is a National Geographic photographer, which I believe is how I learned about this book, I follow the photographer, invited him to do an end-to-end traverse of the Grand Canyon. It's like a 750-mile experience. And they are pretty unprepared, which is that is a way to go into an experience like this. The photographer friend who invites him tells him it'll be a walk in the park, and that's where the book's title comes from. And they only come to learn later that the like really experienced hikers who have done this and done a bunch of hikes around the world refer to it as the hardest hike, the toughest hike in the cool. entire world.
Can a brother Google something? What's happening here?
Right. The synopsis has the sentence, "The ensuing ordeal, which lasted more than a year, revealed a place that was deeper, richer, and far more complex than anything the two men had imagined." I am fresh off a trip out west. We didn't go to the Grand Canyon, but we went to a bunch of the parks in Utah, and just having seen that landscape and done, like, you know, like 25 miles of hiking in it, the idea of doing a 750 year long experience in the desert is really wild. This is going to be great on audio, but that's, I think, one to maybe look for. And then it feels like N.K. Jemisin might be in your son's fiction zone, just from like the other flavors of things. So I would take a look. She's got a couple series and a couple standalones. So just take a look at N.K. Jemisin, see which one you think fits the best for your son's taste. But I think that's an interesting direction for him too.
All right, moving on. Hello. I read The Orchard by David Hopin when it came out in 2020. I think I heard about it on a Book Riot podcast with Liberty. You probably did. She was stumping, excuse the pun, for The Orchard pretty
yes,
pretty significantly, and still think about it frequently. In a lot of ways, it is similar to The Secret History, but the thing I remember most about the book is the in-depth integration of Judaism. The main character moves from an ultra-Orthodox Jewish school to a much more permissive one. I also like that it's about teens, but written for adults. Are there other books out there that feature religion without being preachy or inspirational, and or dark stories about teens written for an adult audience? I'm also a bit of a Megan Abbott fan, and she comes to mind too. Thank you so much.
Interesting.
All right.
Yeah, I remember Liberty talking about this, and so I just went straight to the source and
there
was like,
go.
What is that book that you recommend for people who love The Orchard? And it is My Name is Asher Lev by Chaim Potok. When I asked Liberty, she said, it's the single book that I tell people if I had been made to read it when I was a kid, I would be a different person.
Mm.
So take that for the powerful recommendation that it is.
Very
coming
powerful.
From Liberty Hardy. The main character, Asher Lev, is a Hasidic Jew who keeps kosher and prays three times a day and grows up in a cloistered Hasidic community in Brooklyn. That's a world, I'm kind of paraphrasing the synopsis here, that has a lot of ritual and revolves around, in his experience, one particular rabbi. And Asher Lev is torn between two identities, the one, his religious identity, and also he is an artist, and he's pulled between sort of that place of tradition and the place of creativity and imagination, and feels driven to render the world that he sees before him, apparently even if it leads him to blasphemy. So this is one I've heard Liberty talk about it so many times over the years. I feel like I should just pick it up too. Maybe we can all read this together, or know that that's a thing we're doing this spring and summer. But that's My Name is Asher Lev by Lev by Chaim Potok.
I took the bull by the horns, and so I've got a point in each hand for you here. I've got one on the religious front, and then one on the dark stories about teens front. Death Comes for the Archbishop by Willa Cather. I've recommended a lot over the course of my existence. It is about a Catholic priest who is in the American Southwest and coming to the end of his life around, I think it's set in the teens. But it's about a person of faith written by someone. I don't know. I don't remember. It's, gosh, the things you forget. When I used to know Willa Cather intimately and read the biographies and all this stuff. She is not a super religious person, but, you know, grew up in a small Midwestern town, Red Cloud, Nebraska. And, you know, like many of us who grew up in smaller Midwestern towns, even of late, the church meant a lot. And when she wrote extensively about the American West, and this comes up, and it's quite beautiful and moving. And even as someone who has moved away and out of the pew myself, I found it moving and meaningful in its own right. I guess, is also where we can touch the sign over the door that says Gilead by Marilyn Robinson, if
yes.
you're interested in such a thing. But moving along, on the dark book about teens written for adults, I have some questions for you by Rebecca Mackay. You heard us talk
it's
about it.
Pick.
And it does not rise to the level of Secret History in many ways, but it scratches the same itch, and I think it scratches is pretty well. It's about a woman who goes back to her alma mater and is a podcaster and is remembering and sort of getting back into something that happened. And let's be honest, I mean, 18 and 19-year-olds are college kids, but they're also teens. So I guess the Secret mm-hmm. History does the same thing. This is not 13 or 14-year-olds doing weird stuff. This is 18-year-olds, which feels different and is different, but these are still
yes.
still young people. And there is the element of campus, a college novel, as being sort of a practice life in a lot of ways. I used to talk to my students about this. Like, it's set up to help you practice being on your own when you're not actually on your own. That is a privilege afforded those who sleep away at college and get to go and don't have to start earning a living right away. But there is an element of there's a finishing school element to college where you're an adult, but you're not quite. There are consequences, not quite. On the other hand, you still live in the real world. And some of the things do not result in just being expelled or getting a D. Some of them are actual real life consequences. And this is where the line blurs. So also a pretty good read, I would suggest. Too. I was thinking about Special Topics in Calamity Physics by Marissa Pressel. Mm-hmm. You might be interested in that one too. It's been a while, but I think I have some questions for you. It's probably the more current seeming pick. Now out in paperback, I should say.
All right. Next one comes to us from Mandy. Her younger brother is in the Navy and he's off on deployment in July. She says, as I'm the older sister and the reader in the family, I get the job of stocking his e-reader for him to take. I've done it before and I had major wins with John Scalzi, The Martian, Murderbot, and Red Rising. But I read mostly sci-fi fantasy murder mysteries and my brother mostly watches horror. He's not a huge reader when he's not on deployment. I read and loved From Below and felt weird about giving that to him on a boat, and Mexican Gothic, which were both hits with him. I plan to add Lone Women, Thanks Jeff, and Ring Shout. He loved The Haunting of Hill House TV show, Succession, Mad Men, Breaking Bad, and the works of Jordan Peele. Looking for recs from horror or other genres that he might like that she doesn't read. And bonus points if we can help diversify the list. This is the second person in this round of moms, dads, and grads who is loading up someone else's e-reader. And I love this and would like to hear more
Never
about
heard
these experiences.
This. Yeah, this is very cool. You love to see it. I got several picks for you. Probably my number one pick isn't out yet, but I'll mention it here. It is June 11th, so you can get that in before he submerges in July. Horror movie by Paul Tremblay. Tremblay has emerged as, you know, one of the, you know, the king acolytes. All of the Paul Tremblay synopsis sounds to me like they could be the king of horrors books. So this one is, in 1993, a group of young guerrilla filmmakers spent 4 weeks making horror movie. The weird part, only 3 of the scenes were ever released to the public, but horror movie has nevertheless grown into a rabid fan base. It kind of sounds to me like, you know, all the stuff about how, was the Blair Witch Project real? And this is sort of like, what if it was, right? That's kind of what Tremblay is doing here. Sounds way too scary for me, but I thought the premise sound fantastic. On the funny front, I just was thinking about this as I was saying this out loud. Grady Hendrix's Horror Store with umlauts over some of the vowels there is a horror novel set in IKEA, which was
yes.
sounded like a lot of fun and apparently was a lot of fun. I really like what Grady Hendrix is doing. It's hard to even to... Grady Hendrix comps are extremely difficult. No one's actually cooking
yeah.
like that guy is right now. Things I've read myself. Speaking of horror movie or movie set, Silver Nitrate by Silvia Marino-Garcia, a film editor, gets involved in sort of a similar, not quite similar, but like something happened on a movie set and what happened. Kind of great. This came up. Did I recommend this somewhere else? I can't remember where this came up, but The House of Char by Scott Hawkins is one of those. Maybe it does come up later. I'm going to save it for later. The House of Char by Scott
okay.
Hawkins is one of the most disturbing, weird, and readable books I've ever done. I think I also got that off Liberty, so I'll put that there. And then lastly, The Hacienda by Isabella Canas. I think I read last year, the year before. A woman marries into a family. I think it's Cuba. I'm pretty sure it's Cuba. And the homestead, the estate that comes with, let me tell you, it's not everything is cool there. And yeah, it was freaky and awesome. That's The Hacienda by Isabella Canas.
Right. I went for maybe some Stephen Graham Jones, and I was looking at a bunch. He has standalones and series, and one of the standalones, The Only Good Indians, has the comp for fans of Jordan Peele and Tommy Orange, which sounds perfect.
Stephen Graham Jones is another one. I mean, he and Tremblay, and then Victor Laval, as you say here, Gabriel Iglesias. There's a few of these people working in this space.
Yeah, and this one is a story that follows the lives of four American Indian men and their families who are haunted by a disturbing, deadly event that took place in their youth. Years later, they find themselves tracked by an entity bent on revenge, totally helpless as the culture and traditions they left behind catch up to them in a violent and vengeful way. Stephen Graham Jones has been on my list forever, and I keep like tiptoeing up to it and then backing off because I don't read a lot of horror. So listeners, I would love suggestions from you on which one to go with for myself as well. I think maybe also try Land of Milk and Honey by C. Pam Zhang. I was thinking about that Get Out vibe of like something sinister is happening in this place where you have found yourself and you don't quite know what it is, but you know it's bad news. And Land of Milk and Honey gets at that feeling. More of it's a story about a young, like set slightly in the future, a young chef is hired by a billionaire to go live on a private estate in the mountains of Italy, where they've kind of magically protected themselves from having to feel the impact of climate change. And like something is going on in this compound. And for like the best of the best of, the graphic novels, when that was a different person. But anyway, I do think Watchmen, the graphic novel, might be worth a pick here because of the prestige TV stuff. And it gets at a lot of really interesting questions about race. Actually, the show more than the movie. So if you're also responsible for loading up what he can stream while he's deployed, recommend HBO's adaptation of Watchmen. I also think We Cast a Shadow by Maurice Carlos Ruffin would be in his wheelhouse here. So lots of variety for you to choose from.
Excellent. My read? Gosh, I can't ever remember. Yep. I didn't put my pick in. Anyway, I know it is off the... I've got it in mind. Anyway, great. I teach first-year students at a large public university. I'm looking for books that are literary or topical enough for students to write essays about and new enough that they will appeal to new adults. I like dark academia, but so many of them are about so very white elite institutions. My students like mysteries or true crime, but I struggle to find one with substantive issues to analyze or research. What are the best books you can think of that are set at public universities? Preferably with non-white characters and less than 350 pages. Or new adult books that aren't only about romance. What books speak to kids this day, these days? I feel so old. Luckily, you've come to me. I'm a 46-year-old with an 11- and 13-year-old who reads about apples and old boats.
Yeah, you know, I thought about the Rebecca Mackay for this, but since she was specifically asking, like, that's set on a boarding school. So it's high school students and... a lot of them are white, but not all of them. And it's not like younger, new adult. It didn't quite fit the bill, but you might, Nicole, also take a look at that, Rebecca Mackay. And then I've got three links for you to roundups that Book Riot contributors have done about dark academia of all flavors that I think will get to what you're trying to get to here much better than I can. I'm excited to hear what yours is, Jeff. I think I might have a guess.
Yeah, it's Come and Get It by Kylie Reed, which... I think wasn't as successful as I hoped it might be. I said kind of a, when we talked about on the show, kind of a B+. Now, having said that, for what you want to do, it is an A++ because it is set at the University of Arkansas. It's a public school. There are characters of color in it. Race itself is a signal issue. I can imagine having assigned this to I never taught at a public school, but if I had been assigned this as a sophomore at the University of Kansas, it would have blown our minds to talk about. It's about people overhearing things and relationships that should or shouldn't happen. I think there's a lot to talk about there. It didn't get mentioned in a lot of year-end roundups and things like that. And I understand why. Nicole, I think probably if you take a look at it and read it, you will find that it's not going to be an all-time classic that, you know, it's going to be, you know, the most assigned books on college syllabuses in 50 years. But if your primary thing is something they're going to find interesting to write and think about and rip through, because it feels so, they will have their own stories that are sort of orthogonal to things that happen in this book. I guarantee you that. So that is my one and only and sort of emphatic recommendation that you take a look at Come and Get It by Kylie Reid.
All right. Your read.
Just in writing about mums, sorry, I'm Australian, dads and grads book recommendations, I'm chasing something for myself. I'm an environmental management student and read a lot of related nonfiction in my spare time. I do love it, but a lot of what I read ends up being really bleak and almost scary. To be honest, I might be verging on a book slump for reading these books so consistently. I hear that. I was wondering if you have any recommendations for something in a similar area, but maybe a fiction read, question mark, like say a fiction book that heavily features the natural environment or a cool adventure story that describes nature well and isn't too dense. I'm really open to trying anything. You took my two thoughts, so I went somewhere else. So there you go.
I've got Burnham Wood by Eleanor Catton. This is set on the South Island of New Zealand, so not terribly far from your neck of the woods, Kobe. It is about a group of young adults who are environmental activists bordering on, not environmental terrorists, but activists with some like guerrilla tactics. And they get involved with a billionaire who is not up to the purely good things that he says he's up to. Lots of things happen. It is, I think, an interesting take at a corner of the kind of world that you're working in and researching. Wonderful sentences. Reads like a house on fire. Eleanor Catton just knows what she's doing, and it's sharp and it's funny and kind of, it does all the things. I was just delighted the entire time that I was reading it. And then a shared fave of mine and Jeff's that I just got to first on this document here is Peter Heller. These are the cool adventure stories. It's usually a couple of guys out in nature. Either they're like kayaking down a river, or they're hiking in a mountain, or they're doing something else, and something go sideways, or some person appears that they are not expecting to encounter, and they've got to get themselves out of the situation. And so it's both, it's like nature survival and kind of thrillery survival stuff as well. And I think you could just read the descriptions of those and pick the one that rings your bells the most. But Peter Heller, one of the most consistent, like high hit rates of, of a contemporary author. I think you know what you're getting. He does a similar thing repeatedly, and they're all good. I don't feel like he's lessened over time, no. Even though he's kind of working in the same vein.
Just bangs out double after double.
Yeah. Peter yes. Right yeah.
There. Kind of the nice thing about you taking my ready-made picks is I had to think another level, and I think maybe I have the pick out of all this.
Okay.
With The Overstory by Richard Powers, which won the Pulitzer Prize in 2019, and I think has become a book that people read. I see it all the time out on tables and paperback favorites. I really like this book. My dad loved this book. Not that that matters to you. And Patchett called it the best novel ever written about trees. Which, you know, do you think I would be Ann Patchett's favorite person, or just like the top 10 if she knew who I was? I mean, probably just the top 10. But that's the kind of thing I would like to say about The Overstory. It's a series of interlocking vignettes, stories, fables about trees and how they intersect with our own lives. And it's pretty amazing. Powers, I think, was a computer programmer before he turned novelist. And I find, much like Andy Weir was, I find these kinds of writers, I think Neil Hopkinson or Niecy Shaw, so one of those writers too was like a computer programmer that comes into the world of writing from a technical field of literary writing and fiction writing from a technical field to be fascinating. But it is terrific. It has a wonderful paperback cover, by the way, too. It's really terrific. And I think the kind of thing that you would really enjoy. And I wonder, I'd be curious to hear. I kind of find myself in a similar position a lot of times when I'm reading about book-related things. That, you know, it's like, this is too much. But I pick up like the sentence by Lewis Erdrich, and I like books and reading about books again. So it just kind of happens. So there you go.
Today's episode is brought to you by Sourcebooks Landmark. So King Solomon says something very interesting to his son before he dies, and that is, quote, "Don't let the white man take the house," end quote. These, as I just mentioned, are King Solomon's last words to his son as he dies. Now, all four Solomon siblings must return to North Carolina to save the kingdom, their ancestral home, and 200 acres of land from a development company. Told in alternating viewpoints, Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris is a searing portrait of the power of family and letting go of things that no longer serve you, exploring the burden of familial expectations, the detriment of miscommunication, and the lessons and legacies we pass on to our children. It's an explosive and emotional story of four siblings, each fighting their own personal battle, because who isn't, who return home in the wake of their father's death. Make sure to check out Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris, and thanks again to Sourcebooks Landmark for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Penguin Team. In a world where the children of the gods inherit their powers, a descendant of the Greek Fates must solve a series of impossible murders to save her sisters, her soulmate, and her city. Descendants of the Fates are always born in threes. There's one to weave, one to draw, and one to cut the threads that connect people to the things they love and to life itself. And the Aura sisters are no exceptions. There is Io, the youngest, who uses her Fate-born abilities as a private investigator, but her latest job leads her to a horrific discovery. Somebody is abducting women and setting the resulting wraiths loose in the city to kill. Now, the second book in the series, Hearts That Cut, will be on sale June 18th, 2024. This is a must-read for all Greek mythology and fantasy fans. This is dripping with atmosphere, edged with danger. Threads That Bind weaves together a gorgeous dark tapestry of mystery, faded romance, and modern myth. You won't be able to put this one down, and that comes from Alexandra Bracken, New York Times bestselling author of Lore. So make sure to pick up Threads That Bind by Kitsa Hatsopoulou, and thanks again to Penguin Teen for sponsoring this episode.
All right, I believe this would be your read now.
Yeah, this is from Olivia. Moving for the first time since college age to a place that is not her hometown. Oh, and Olivia has been listening to us for 11 years.
Wow.
So thank you, Olivia. She's moving to the DC area and would love a recommendation for geographic specific books. She said she knows some Book Riot peeps are even from the area and might have deeper cuts. No limits on genre or trigger warnings, fiction and nonfiction are welcome. In their late 20s, ready to start an adventurous year, seeing all the museums and the sites, and would love some books that are in or about the area or weird people from that area that stole odd things. She says nonviolent true crime is a genre that she's grateful to Book Riot for introducing her to. Loved The Map Thief and The Feather Thief.
Mm.
Here for anything we recommend.
The X Thief, I would read all of those. The Thief, the X Thief. Right. I'll read those.
The Document Thief.
Yeah.
Yes, there's the, yeah, all, give whatever. Give
I've got us. Three for you. One of them I haven't read, though I did just pick it in my number one overall draft pick in the summer draft, spoiler alert, but also an advertisement for the Patreon. Someone Like Us by Dinah Mengistu is coming out. I'm trying to look for July 30th, and it's the story of a son of an Ethiopian family from immigrant from Ethiopia, and their close-knit immigrant Ethiopian community, which happens to be set in Washington, D.C., so I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Another one I have off the dome for you is Company by Shannon Sanders, which is a short story collection set in and around a elite university in Washington, D.C., and especially her Black family and its attendant sisters and uncles. Each story is loosely hung on someone visiting from somewhere else. So that's always a nice transitional moment. It's like, oh, Uncle Blank is here, or we're going over to this party. So that's, I find it really cool. And then if you want to get weird, Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders. George Saunders was inspired to write this after hearing about Abe Lincoln's going to, I think it's Oak Hill Cemetery. I don't have the name of the cemetery at the top of mind, as I once could have remembered things like this. But then this is about Lincoln going to the cemetery, and there are ghosts, and it is wild and kind mm-hmm. of underrated, I think, actually, because
I think
Saunders.
So too.
This book is amazing. And I have heard, if you're an audio person, that the audio experience is sort of unparalleled. Like Nick Offerman plays, I think Linky reads the Lincoln parts or something like that. Like this whole cast. Don't get me started on the economics of celebrities reading, especially full cast audiobooks. That's one of the things I would love to know. But those are my three. So that's Someone Like Us by Dean Almanguestu, accompanied by Shannon Sanders, and Lincoln and the Bardo by the singular George Saunders.
All right. I had a lot of fun with this. I'm only an hour and a half from D.C., yeah, so I spent a lot of time there. Pretty familiar.
I tried
familiar.
To bring some heat because I knew you had some stuff.
Yeah, you did bring some heat. I think you should definitely pick up The Lost Symbol by Dan Brown. It is one of the lesser Dan Browns, but it takes you all over DC. It's about the Masons and, you know, like there's just really quality conspiracy kinds of stuff there. But I had the good fortune of being in DC the weekend that I was reading The Lost yeah. Symbol. It's also when I was like counting the occurrences of noted symbologist Robert Langdon checking his Mickey Mouse watch for a piece for Book Riot. And it was really fun to be like gallivanting around the city and being like, oh, yeah, that's the place that Robert Langdon goes for this thing. So like just lean in, have a good time. The Hopefuls by Jennifer Close is a contemporary, not romance, but kind of rom-com-y feeling novel about two young people who both work in and around politics. You're going to experience a lot of this in DC. I don't know if that's what's taking you to DC, but you're just going to be bumping into people who work in Washington, as it were. And I think she satirizes them pretty lovingly and gets it pretty right. That was just a fun read. While Justice Sleeps by Stacey Abrams is a mystery thriller about a woman who is a Supreme Court clerk, and she gets embroiled in a scandal conspiracy when one of the Supreme Court justices is dying and his secrets come out. That was a lot of fun. And then just earlier this year, Great Expectations by Vincent Cunningham. Cunningham was a finalist for the Pulitzer this year for criticism. He's a, I think, theater critic or film critic for The New Yorker. But before that, he worked on the original Obama campaigns. And this is a novel that is thinly veiled biofiction about a young black man who finds his way into being a high-level fundraiser on the campaign for the first serious black contender for president, who is just referred to as the candidate in the book. So like, you know, it's Obama, but he's not actually like straight up Obama. It was really enjoyable. The book happens partially in DC, but all over the country as the character is moving around doing his fundraising work. But it captures a lot of the DC vibe, I thought, pretty well.
Okay.
Your read.
My read. Hi, Rebecca and Jeff. I just took a trip to Texas. The totality of the eclipse has got me thinking about books about either of those topics, either for me or as gifts for my spouse who planned the trip. Great books set in or about Texas, or great books about involving a solar eclipse. Any genre, but prefer nothing too dark. Particularly, I avoid or at least need a content warning before suicide or child death. Thanks. As always, permission to use my name, Betsy. I guess you should have read this because I have a
pen. Yeah, I should have. I don't have anything here. I racked my brain for eclipse books. I had nothing.
Yeah, so I went way into my bag for this one, Eclipse Fever by Walter Abish. Abish won the Penn Faulkner Award for this avant-garde How German Is It? I'm not recommending that. But his follow-up book called Eclipse Fever, I heard about because he'd won the Penn, and I was a precocious 16-year-old who thought I could read things, and I picked this up, and it is set in Mexico, in the world, like the top echelon, like the rich people, the artists, and the intellectuals, and it's mostly about that, but it's set under the coming eclipse, and there's kind of a fever dream-like intensity and quality to it. It's very, very interconnected. There's an art dealer and there's illegitimate children's, and it's kind of like melodramatic but also super highbrow at the same time and extremely underread. I'm looking at it right now. There are 5 ratings on Amazon for this book. So this is not something that people read very often.
Wow.
It was the one and only book I could think of that involved an eclipse, and it's pretty strange, but I do remember it. Even have it. God, it's been what, 24 years since I read this book.
Wow.
And I still remember it fairly well. It may not be really super eclipsy. I think that was sort of just a, I guess it kind of put a little bit of a if my memory serves, and I could be way wrong about this because it has been some time, it was more of a, there's an eclipse happening, and kind of that, there's like a pre-eclipse energy, right? Even if, like Rebecca, you got yes, to enjoy yeah. only an 85% eclipse. Like, people are vibrating at a slightly different frequency. And Abish was tapping on to that. Like, it has, the cover has a picture of like a ziggurat on fire and this like weird, and this weird element. I don't think you'd buy this. I think the one, the edition that's in print is from Godin Publishers. Big shouts to Godin and Josh Bodwell over there, I guess, today. But I thought the book was pretty terrific. And I don't remember it being that long. It is so old now that I can't, doesn't even have a page number written in the, on the Amazon thing.
Oh,
so
wow.
That really tells you how far afield I have wandered here.
That's wild. There used to be a feature, maybe they still have it. I'm just not on Library Thing anymore, but Library Thing used to have a feature where it would tell you if there were any books in your library that no one else had, where like you were this
cool.
unique title. Yeah, unique titles to you. And I wonder, I mean, 5 ratings on Amazon. I wonder if anybody over on Library Thing is using Eclipse Fever, or if you'd be the only one, Jeff. That's so interesting.
Walter Abish also has an awesome eye patch, I should say. 352 pages.
A list of authors I never thought I would make.
Rushdie,
authors with awesome
Joyce,
eye patches.
Walter Abish. Those are my eye patch authors.
You got at least three, so that's
three.
A pattern.
Yeah, you got 3 eyes between them.
Well, we've got a bunch more than I think we can finish here. I'm giving it a peek. We have a bunch of self requests.
Let's
so
do
those
some.
Aren't
are there
timely.
Any moms we could maybe do the self request list? Okay,
yeah. The very last one here is a mom request.
Let's go.
It's also one that maybe I just didn't see it. I think you had dropped it in near
all
the
right,
end.
You so we'll read do this. It. I'll talk and you can vamp and see if anything comes out.
Yeah,
comes
we'll up. Do this last one and then we'll clean up the self requests on the regular show later in the week. So this is from Ruth, looking for a gift for mom who's a child of the 70s. She enjoyed Daisy Jones and the Six because of the Inside the Band story and the real life connection to Fleetwood Mac. Any book recommendations of based on real life celebrities of the 70s?
Nope, I didn't have any. So I just went 70s historical fiction. The interesting is, you probably would have thought of this at least if you had begin to give it a chance besides right now. So this is, you know, there's teenagers at a summer camp and their bond, you know, they come back later. This was now 10 years old. Good Lord. But very sharply drawn with great characters. I think the plot matters less than the relationships among them. It's in the, I'm trying to think, you know, getting the band back together was another thing I thought about. I know it's not a band, but like a group of people with complex relationships between them. But also set in the 70s there. The other one I was thinking about was Taylor Jenkins Reid's second novel, really after the Evelyn Hugo book, Malibu Rising, which is set in Malibu in the 70s. A young woman who is kind of on the margins of what is emerging as an extremely wealthy surf town, LA, you know, satellite. And she's becoming or trying to become a professional surfer, just a serious surfer. And it has huge 70s vibes. Like I wasn't around. I was a 2 when the clock turned into the 80s, so I wasn't there for much of the 70s. But it felt super 70s to me. And I think would resonate with someone who knows more about that decade. So those are the two that I had off the top of my head. I didn't have any historical fictions of 70s celebrity. I just didn't have anything, Rebecca. And I looked around a little
either.
Bit. I couldn't come up with, I'm not even sure, like, a thinly veiled Sonny and Cher novel, which I would read, by the way, as I say that,
totally.
Like, that's a great idea. Someone should do that. But I didn't have a lot else there.
Yeah. The only thing that comes to mind as I'm vamping for this 70s vibe is Mary Jane by Jessica Anya Blau, sort of a coming of age novel from a few years ago about a teenage girl growing up in, I think it's Baltimore in the 70s.
Yeah.
Her family is like pretty conventional. She's quiet, you know, like bookish, A student, that kind of thing. And she gets a summer job nannying for a local family. One of the parents is a doctor, and like very early in her tenure as their nanny, the doctor brings a rock star into the house to help him basically go through, like, do you remember this? It's like a one-man rehab situation.
Yeah.
And so she has this like up-close front row seat to this rock star's alive, and it also just opens the door to like rock and roll and 70s drug culture and a completely different vibe than what she has experienced in her, you know, like going to church on Sundays, singing in the choir, more traditional family. I really enjoyed it. I think I read it right around the time it came out. It's one of those that like, when you have an opportunity to recommend it where it really fits,
yeah,
it really fits like this, but that I don't think about it that often. Otherwise, I think it might be a good pick for mom though.
Yeah, it's sure. It's easy to read. It reads as very well executed, almost famous fan fiction almost. Like it feels exactly
right.
Like the same thing, which that is a compliment for me. I love that vibe. I don't know that it's based. I mean, it could be based on any number of rock musicians, I guess.
So. Right, pick one.
Yeah, someone who had a drug problem in the 70s who was a lead singer for a band, you know, get in line a little bit. So that one, that's a really good, that what a performance from you with no prep. Incredible stuff, Shinsky, to get out of us on.
Thank you.
Okay, podcast@bookriot.com if you've got comments, questions, especially of the Pulitzer winners. Really looking for Night Watch reactions. To see if I should get to that sooner rather than later. It passed through the transom of my mind to run down to the library and pick it up. I saw it was in stock and like try to read it for Thursday. But it was not the best time in my life to do this. I'm not going to talk. Rebecca knows what I'm talking about for this to happen. So, some other time, but I really like to do that. And thank you all for writing in. Happy Mother's Day. I hope we got enough recommendations to you. We will mop up the rest. We don't want to leave you hanging. This is too much fun to do. And plus, we did the homework, you know.
We did.
Gold
We're
Star
ready.
Students, we need to turn in our homework. The teacher saying, you know what, no quiz today. Rebecca and I were not the kind of people cheering.
No.
We were like, we studied for the quiz.
Give me my gold star.
Yeah, off with the heads for those slackers. I was here. So we'll catch that later. mytbr.co/gift, but also you can go to bookriot.com/listen in the show notes. If TBR might be a good choice for someone in your life or you. Rebecca, we'll talk to you later.